She's up there.
So this is, we are ready on lesson 8 in Nehemiah 6 and 7. Let's see, we have, I'm trying to think of how many, we have next week, then we have a week off, right? The week after that is spring break. And then we have one coming in from that. And is it just, and then the review, and then the project. So we're getting down there. So we talked last week about this last part of Nehemiah is talking about building up our strengths. And the strengths are there to protect the integrity of God's presence. So we're building up walls and gates, both which protect God's, the integrity of God's presence, who he really is, that he is both grace and standard. That there are things that are right and wrong, and that there are all sorts of graces to come into his presence. But that we have to keep those intact as he's shown them to us, not how we decide. So that's what we're talking about. And we're talking about the strengths that we build up. A lot of times we think about the strengths being rules rather than what Nehemiah tells us. And last week, what is the strength from last week that we're told to build up? Unity, right. Unity, which is one of the most important strengths that we have to be able to give to the world the true God. His true presence is unity. And it doesn't mean that we agree with everybody. It means that we're unified in purpose, right, as one people, that we make sure that the witness continues to go out and that it progresses. So unity is a really big factor for us that we should be building toward, encouraging one another, instead of separated, which is what our tendency is. Our tendency as human beings is to separate. But that's why unity is such a big strength, is because it's different than what the world has to offer. This unity is very different. So that was strength number one. Strength number two today is the strength of fear and the fear of the Lord. So we're going to talk a lot about fear. We're going to talk about the fear of man versus the fear of God. And the differences, but also the similarities, which we never want to say, right? We always want to say, oh, when you're talking about fear of the Lord, it's reverence. When you're talking about fear of man, it's terror. But it's the exact same word. It's yare. It's the same word. So we have to talk about how is it really similar? And why is one okay and one not okay? Because really they are the same thing. Even the idea of reverence and awe is the same for man as it is for God. And I hope that I can unpack this for you. This is one of those things that we are so adamant about fear of man and fear of God being different that it's very hard to unpack. So hopefully that I'll be able to do that. So fear of man. We start out in Nehemiah 6, 1, saying that Sanballat and Geshem sent a message to me. Well, that's in the toward the end. We have Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arab and the rest of the enemies are here ready to send messages. And they one of the messages is, come, let us meet together at Shepharim in the plain of Ono. But, Nehemiah says, they were planning to harm me. So we're going to talk about the fear of man, how it comes, what it looks like, and what it is. And I'm going to wait to define what it is until the end, so that we understand how it comes. I think a lot of times we don't understand the fear of man so much. But so much of our life is dictated by the fear of man. Mm-hmm. And I think you'll get to see it if I don't give you a definition to the end. So, fear of man. How does it come in Nehemiah? Did anybody notice one certain keyword that's over and over and over again, how the fear of man came to Nehemiah and the builders? The fear of man comes through repeated messages. So start thinking about that. The fear of man comes through repeated messages. So the people that you named, you were getting a repeated message over and over again that they were not a safe place, right? That they had something over you. But it was a repeated message. And the messages that we get repeated in the world over and over again always call us to join them in the paradigm of finding our worth through self-effort. Now, let me pull back on that. So you may not agree right away, but as we get into it more, I think you will. What happens with fear is we believe, when we're afraid of someone, we believe that they hold the power over us to give us something we want, right? That they have power to give us something we want. Whether it's if a teacher, whether they have the power to give us good grades, right? Whether it's a parent, what would they have the power over us for, to give us something we want? What would we want from them?
Love,
protection. Protection, approval, freedom, right? What were some of the others that we...
Privileges,
yes. Also, so fear is based in believing that another person actually has the power to give you something that you want. And when you dig even farther down, the something you want always ends in worth. What you really want is know that you are valuable. So fear is actually thinking about believing that someone else has the power to give you, to establish your worth. So when you think about who you were afraid of, whether it was a healthy fear or a non-healthy fear, it was really thinking that they have the power to be able to give you worth. Does this make sense? Can you agree with that as you think about who you were afraid of? Because they had power over something that you wanted. And that thing that you wanted, you felt would give you worth. So for me, the first person I thought of, wow, right away, junior high, Mr. Perno, my math teacher. I was a straight A student, always had been, not there. And part of it was because I had gotten to go on a trip. So my first 2 weeks of seventh grade, which was junior high then, I wasn't in class. So I come in to math, and this is, you know, I don't know, what were they studying then? Fractions.
Algebra.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, algebra was a little bit later. And, like, I just couldn't get it.
Binomial things.
Yeah.
Just times that plus that.
I just could not. I could get algebra, no problem. The fractions, I couldn't get. I don't know. I don't remember what it was, but I couldn't get it. And I was so afraid of him. He was a gruff person, which made that even harder, right? So I'm thinking, he is the person that's going to withhold my A. And so he did. He absolutely did. First time my parents ever had to go to school on anything. You know, she's not catching up. first bad grade I've ever gotten. So I was very afraid of him, but because... I think I was heading toward a C, and I didn't even know what that letter was. So, you know, that was... And I think most of you know, I'm growing up, for me...
A C is an F.
A C is an F. Not only a C is an F, C is worth punishment.
Yeah.
Because my mother would say, you're not rewarded for an A because that's what you're expected. If you get anything below A, you will be punished. And that was to me, that was withholding love for me. So to me, my teacher had the power over me to assign worth to me. That's really what fear is based under. So the repeated messages then of the world are, I want you to join us in this paradigm of finding worth for yourself, right? That you can... do something in order to get worth, to actually find worth by your own efforts, by following and being driven by what you feel makes you worthy. So we'll go all the way back to 2 Timothy, where we talk about what drives you, your psuche or your bios, right? The things you think about or the things you feel, driven by that, that's the world's messages. Yep, yeah, get driven, because those will tell you that you're worthy. If you're able to accomplish that, how you feel gets supported, or what you think about is right or good, what you think is good, you being the center of what's good is really the paradigm that the repeated messages are actually saying. Come join us in that paradigm. We want you to be in that paradigm. Because any challenge to that idea will... suffocate them. We'll say, if you're challenging that the idea is not true, that you can get worth from doing something, from making sure that your feelings get met, the needs and things that you think are right get met. If that isn't true, if there's even a hint of that not being true, everything they've ever worked for is gone, right? Which means they must be worthless in their paradigm. So do you see the struggle that they're the world, and this is not a conscious effort. This is, since I live in this paradigm that I can make worth for myself, I need everybody else to go along with that idea, right? Because if they don't, then I have to question it, right? I go back and go, you mean I'm not getting worth from getting good grades? You mean I'm not worthy because I'm smart? Oh no, then I'm not worthy. You see that? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it is a huge fight for anyone in the world, and that includes us, to make sure that paradigm stays intact. So that the repeated messages will always be, let's keep it intact, let's keep that intact, over and over and over again. Those are the repeated messages, and they always are repeated messages of fear. So think about the repeated messages in our world. There are messages that say, if you're beautiful, you are worthy, right? Mm-hmm. That's a message we hear all the time. Where do we hear it from?
Commercials.
Mm-hmm. Where else? What?
Products.
Products.
Mm-hmm. Cartoons. I mean, look at most of those cartoons, and then you have little girls that go, I'm not beautiful.
Yep. So all of our media, right? I mean, pretty much, that's a repeated message that we hear over and over and over again. And it is, you can find worth in something that you do for yourself, right? So that even if you're not born beautiful, if you buy these products, you can get beautiful. If you exercise 3 times a day, you can get, right? Okay, so these are repeated messages, and they're based in fear. Right? Mm-hmm. Because if you don't buy this, if you don't exercise, if you don't wear these clothes, you're not beautiful and you're not worthwhile. You're not valuable. Make sense? Okay. So we have to be very aware of this because it is how the world works. So that what's happening in Nehemiah, there's this fear. And you're going to see where this fear comes. They're trying to make sure that everybody's in the same paradigm. The messages will try to intimidate, which is exactly what Sanballat and Tobiah do with Nehemiah. They try to intimidate him by making, for us or for him, making us believe that they can take away our worth. You don't buy my product. You don't do what I tell you to do. You're not going to have worth. Sanballat and Tobiah say to Nehemiah, well, we hear that you're planning to rebel. We hear that, and we hear you're planning to make yourself king. So we're going to tell the king on that. I mean, it sounds childish, and yet it is what our messages do too. I'm going to tell the world you're not worthy. You don't do these things. You're not valuable by intimidation, right? We're going to point you out as ugly. We're going to point you out as, and in some way, sometimes the makeover shows are like that, right? And I love the makeover shows. I think they're so cool. But sometimes I can think like, oh, you know, I should get my friend to have a makeover. What does that say? Yeah, it says, you know, you could be beautiful. If you just, you know, changed. I do this more with houses. I walk down the block and I'll say, why did they do that? Why didn't they, you know, they could have put bushes there. They could have. It's this, if they just change, if they just do what I see as beautiful, they'll be beautiful. That's intimidation. When we, you know, if it goes beyond my head, then I'm in trouble. It shouldn't be in my head either, but. So messages that intimidate, but also messages that shame. So Sambalot and Tobiah do this by actually inviting Nehemiah to hide, right? And that's shame, right? We had a whole semester on shame, and that's what we talked about. You know you're in shame if you're hiding in some way or form. And they invite him to hide. They invite him to hide in where?
The temple.
In the temple. Why is that such a bad thing? Because somebody's trying to kill him.
He's not a priest.
So he shouldn't be going into the temple. But the fact of the matter is that they're inviting him to hide already says something, right? It says, your life, you living, is what makes you valuable. Hide so you save it, rather than what God has told you to do. So I'm going to shame you into doing something wrong because you have to save your life. You have to make sure that your body is the valuable thing. Both of these tactics, whether intimidation or shame, are exploitations of our image-bearing job of naming worth. They do just the opposite, right? They withhold naming worth to tell you, I have the ability to give you the worth. When in reality, no one has the ability to give you worth. They only have the ability to point it out or not point it out. Mm-hmm. But fear, when I induce fear in someone, I make them believe I have the ability to give them worth, to determine their worth. And we buy it. When I'm fearful of someone, I have bought into the fact that they can determine my worth. And that's what Nehemiah is actually fighting against. Why do people want to induce fear? Again, because they're afraid of losing their paradigm that they've built their life on. They're afraid of losing their place as their own king in their own kingdom, their independence and control. For all the things they think have brought them worth, they don't want that destroyed. Or their paradigm challenged. I spoke someplace a while ago, and before I did, someone said to me, oh, I just don't like to go to those churches where the preacher gets up and starts to tell you that everything you've believed about this passage is wrong, and it goes this way. Well, guess you guys know how I and I looked at her and I thought, oh boy, I am, that's exactly what I'm going to get up and do. I am going to tell you that there's a different way of looking at this. We don't like our paradigms changed, right? That is tough. Because when my paradigm is changed or challenged, I have to sit back and go, I've been orchestrating my life according to that paradigm. And if it's not really true, what does that say about everything I've been doing?
Wasting my time.
Yes. Not only have I wasted my time, but I've thought I've been building up my value. And now, if I have to rethink that and that's not true, I haven't been building up my value. I have no value. Do you see why there's such a fight about losing our paradigms? So this is for everyone. But this is also why we intimidate, why we shame. We don't want to lose that. Boy, as soon as I said that, I remember, to me, one of the worst comments I was ever given by, I think it was reviews of teaching, was that I was intimidating. And that was, like, I remember to this day thinking, I'm intimidating? That was just, that destroyed me. To hear that, to think that I would cause someone fear. That I'm, and now, you know, as I'm thinking through, I'm thinking, so they were thinking that I was telling them if they didn't get it this way, they weren't worthy. Wow, how do I change that? I don't want to do that. But I also don't want to be intimidated, right? Because no one can give me and determine my worth. No one. They can name my worth or they cannot name my worth. But that doesn't change my worth in any way. But that is what fear is all about. And fear is such an ingrained thing in our society, in all societies, in humanity. It looks different in different places, but it's the same. That is what fear is about. The problem with fear is, in fear of man, when we fear man, what happens is it stops the work of restoration. So what fear does is reorients us. It does exactly opposite of orientation. It doesn't face us to God. It faces us away from God. It gets us to look away from protecting the integrity of God's presence to protecting our integrity. So fear stops us from doing the work of protecting God's integrity and makes us look toward protecting ourselves, right? So anytime you fear, Karen, you even said, when you even think about your uncle, I don't want to have, right? I pull away. And when I pull away, I stop doing the restoration work that would have come from that contact, right? So all of those contacts would have been an opportunity for me to name worth. But I pull away, right? Because I'm protecting my integrity now. So it stops the work of restoration. Thus, it interrupts relationship. So fear interrupts relationship. But you're the one, if you're fearful, interrupting the relationship. Because remember, priests go first. And even though it seems like he might hold the ability and power over determining my worth, he doesn't. And if I give him that power, if I say, yes, that's true, then I interrupt a relationship that could have been there. I interrupt a gate that could have been for a relationship there. But I also interrupt the relationship in the cohort between me and God and the others.
Yes, I read this week, and I think you've named this in the class before, but it just kind of fits with what you're saying, that there's a tribe in Africa that if someone goes astray and maybe breaks the rules of the tribe, instead of kicking that person out, they put them in the center and they surround that person and name worth for 2 days straight of that person, lifting them up.
Yes.
Naming all the things that they've done in their life.
Yes.
Who they are.
Yes.
And that just blows every paradigm we've ever thought of about someone who's a criminal or.
Yes.
Yeah, so anyway,
exactly.
Wow.
That's a picture of what we're supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
They just formed a wall, right? No. We are a naming body.
Yeah.
We are a body that names worth.
Even the article said, because they assume that if someone's gone astray, it's because they've forgotten who they are.
Yes.
And I was like, wow.
Yes. That's exactly it. Mm. So it's not about protecting ourselves. It's about protecting the integrity of God's cohort. Right? That's a beautiful picture. I mean, thinking about that, when someone has gone astray, whether they're intimidating you, trying to make you afraid, or they've gone away from you, the reaction is go away from them, right?
Yeah.
The response is form a nice wall, come around them, come together, start naming them.
Doesn't that remind you of parenting, though? Like, in parenting, we catch ourselves intimidating our children or shaming them. It's like removing
right.
your love instead
yes.
of circling them
exactly.
and naming their worth.
Yes.
Like put them there
right.
because we're fearful that people are not going to think that I'm a good parent.
Yes, exactly.
Like if they're behaving
yes.
that way,
yep.
you must be doing something
right.
wrong.
Right. So again, what we're protecting ourselves, right? Our integrity. When God says, you protect my integrity, that's what I'm doing. I'm protecting your integrity. So that's a beautiful picture, Kristen. Thanks for bringing that up. That just really is gorgeous. And when we give in to fear, when we think that someone actually can determine our worth, we stop that restoration process. We stop coming around people and naming them. We stop relating to people. And we stop asking people to come around. So, and I love the fact that it's not just one person came up and talked to them. It's the whole village, right, comes together and says, we all see, these are the things that we see in you. So fear, succumbing to the fear of man, stops the work of restoration, but it also stops us from revealing truth, which is exactly what happens there. It gets us to hide. Fear obscures God's instructions, which are boundaries for our good, right? Which will help us name and tend and make space. Fear puts us in panic mode, right? Fear is, I'm going to go away. I'm going to protect myself. I don't want to miss out on any kind of worth somebody might give me. So I'm going to not do what that person doesn't want me to do. Or I'm going to do what that person wants me to do because I'm going to protect. I'm fearful. And this is, again, this missing out idea. Missing out on someone naming my worth. I so want it. And I think we need to understand how basic that is to us. Is needing to hear that we're worthy, that we're valuable, is so important and so in the core of who we are that we will even forget about what God says and go toward what isn't. So this idea of Nehemiah going to the temple, what they were trying to do was get him so afraid of missing out on being worthy, of being in the in crowd, of being named as a good leader, that I'm so thinking about that. Remember, I've turned away from what God, that I'll run into the temple. Yeah, I've got to protect myself. Because I'm so afraid of missing out on somebody saying I'm valuable or showing I'm valuable. Even when we're afraid of physical, I'm surprised no one brought up physical harm. Because that's a very innate, like, I'm afraid of someone hurting me.
What about the spanking paddles?
Oh, yeah, right, you're right. I'm sorry?
The spanking paddles.
The spanking paddles, oh, yeah, that's true.
That's what the people I was afraid of as a teenager and as an adult, you know, I didn't really even know them, but they looked like someone that might kill me.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and she's not exaggerating. So, yes, and here's the thing. If someone harms me, what that says is, you're not valuable. You understand that? So harm to me, physical harm to me, is a sign that you're not valuable.
Okay. I have an interesting example. Is on our street, used to be a street full of girls, which was perfect when I had, my girls were little, and now it's a street full of little boys. And my son, who's in kindergarten, is on the young end of these boys. And it is a daily terrible mistreatment that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I try to be out there to play with the boys and try to make it as positive as I can, or my girls are out there. It's like every day it's kind of a daily little mission to help this. And, you know, on Sunday I was at a mother-daughter tea for my oldest daughter who's in high school, and my eighth grader calls me crying. She's like, it's bad. I mean, they surround my little guy, and he is a sweetie. You know, he's five. He's not perfect. He does his goofy stuff. I get that. But these little boys will surround him and yell at him, and like they're so mean to him.
Mm.
And so yesterday, Lord, how do I handle this? You know, because I have to tend to his needs, to my girls' needs. You know, it's like it's difficult. And we try to be a family that, you know, plans little block parties and brings people together. You know, we really make a concerted effort to do that. And so I sent a text message to two moms of, you know, the one mom has the three boys that are not nice, the other one has the one. And I just sent a message saying, hey, you got 10, 15 minutes, we can just talk. I've just got some questions about, you know, stuff with the kids and, you know. And the one responded right away. We had a quick, literally 20-minute talk, went so great. I was like, you know, anything we can do to work together would be great. And, you know, I want to know if my son is this or how I can help him to get along better. And the other mom, with such a benign request, like, hey, can we talk? Such a nasty response just to that. And I think, oh, I don't like, what am I doing or do I need to do to not cause her to feel shame, because it was certainly not in the words, but, you know, it's like such a multi-level, you know, I've got a responsibility to my kids first, and then as a neighbor, so.
But is your really responsibility hard to defend or to name worth?
Well, I really was not seeking to defend. That was not the conversation at all.
It was really just to say, this, here's what's happening, and I'm sure there's a whole piece of it that I have no knowledge of what goes on. I don't understand at all, you know. But to name words.
Okay, Maida, I just want you to think about switch a paradigm. Let's say your only responsibility is to name worth.
Okay.
How would you do that?
Yeah, I don't know. That's my brain. Well, if I could tell you how much time we are the only ones out that play with the kids, tell them what good little basketball players they are. I mean, it is a very intentional effort to be. You know, I've never called it naming worth, but I really think that we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just by spending time with them.
I mean, literally driving out today, they're out shooting. I'm like, you guys are getting so good at that. Look at that, you know. Mm-hmm. But there is just this dynamic against my little guy, you know.
Yeah, my only question is, we have to be very, very careful about even saying, and you said the word, against. Because what your son probably knows is those boys are against him.
Oh, he does. He brings it up.
But so does mom.
I don't do it in front of him, though.
But that's how you feel, right? They're against. Okay. So this is like switching from, you know, being an adult to a little kid. I mean, it's almost impossible. It seems hard to do. Mm-hmm. But what Nehemiah is saying here is, this is about naming worth. Notice Nehemiah never says to Sanballat or Tobiah, and he could have, right? Mm-hmm. You're idiots. You can't be doing this to me. Mm-hmm. All he says is, I'm doing an important work. He names the work he's doing as important. Mm-hmm. He's not fighting against them.
Right.
He never fights against them. He doesn't even call them on the carpet, really. He just says, I'm doing important work, and what you said isn't true. Those are the two things he says. It's never this, he never sets himself up as an enemy. Even though they are his enemies, he never sets himself up as an enemy in any way or form. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to give you a solution, but all I'm saying is, we have to start thinking about how do we even non-verbally send a message that people are against? How do we non-verbally send a message of fear, of they have the ability to give me worth? So one of the, I think your number one project, and I think you do this all the time, but you can't do it, I don't think you can ever do it too much, is naming worth in your own son, right? So that just because boys are bullying doesn't mean he doesn't have worth. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like number one, right?
Oh, sure.
But so that he understands that the stuff that happens with the other boys isn't anything about his worth. They don't know, and this is probably more the conversation. They don't know how to name worth in people, so they're afraid. Because when people bully, what do people bully out of?
Fear.
Out of fear. And even when your son can understand that, even as a five-year-old, we can understand. We do things out of fear. And when I see that the enemy is doing it out of fear, does that change my idea of the enemy? Mm-hmm. It does. Mm-hmm. It does. So that we begin to look at them as they're fearful. I don't ever want them to think that they're only worthwhile if they behave right. Mm-hmm. What Kristen just said, right? That whole idea of we're going to come around. Now, that would be an interesting idea. Could you come around each one of those boys individually, come around them, and start naming all of their worth?
Yeah.
Because they're doing it because they don't feel worthy. They're trying to find a way to feel worthy.
Gosh, maybe you even saw a piece of that text, or she's not getting back to you. Maybe she's speaking out of her own pain. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, she's refusing to feel, like, she's refusing to have a conversation where she could feel bad about herself.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I will not engage in anything that will make me feel bad.
Well, right. How many of us parents want to hear that?
Yeah. Right.
Because then it makes us feel like, we're not very valuable parents. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I mean, it goes wraps into, you know, everything is wrapped into being a good mom.
Yeah.
Well,
she probably already knows what her kids are
doing. Well, of course she does.
Like, again, she doesn't know about it.
I don't think she does know. Literally, she has never, like, we're the only ones out there playing with the kids.
Well, but that doesn't.
I don't know how you are.
That's your picture, Maida. That's your picture. Remember, that's your picture of being a good mom. So there's lots of other ways of being a good mom.
Well, I'm not saying that she's not a good mom. I'm not trying to infer that. But as far as, like, what's going on outside and how the kids are playing together,
she
doesn't know how you possibly have knowledge that if you don't.
Really? You don't think, I mean, mostly you know pretty much what your kids are like.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you see how they treat each other at home,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
But I think there is that projection of, I don't want to know. Do you know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
A lot of people do that. Like,
yes.
I just don't want
yes.
to know.
Yes. And even if it's,
you know what I mean?
And I've had right. that, I've been in your position yeah, where I've had to say to a parent, you know, I think your child might be involved in drugs. How dare you say that to me?
Right.
Like,
right.
Horrible. And I thought, wow, I thought I was trying to do something helpful to help you see. So all I'm saying is, I think this is tough. For us to change a paradigm of starting to think, if someone is bullying, if someone is making you fearful, how do I, as a namer of worth, as an image bearer, how do I respond rather than react? Do I react by defending, saying you can't do that? Or do I respond saying, have you not been named worth yourself? You must not be feeling, I know that you're trying to get worth out of this. I mean, that is the absolute truth. You're being mean, you're doing wrong because you're trying to get worth. How can I help that? It's not by pointing out that you're being bad. Rarely will that help. Because what happens? As soon as you say, I'm wrong, what do? Mm-hmm. I'm going to put up a wall, right?
Right.
I got to protect myself. Because that's the paradigm I live in. So the image bearer names worth. The image bearer actually says, well, I don't see you as the enemy. I see you as someone who hasn't seen themselves as valuable. Does it make sense to you?
Well, I mean, I get it, and it's, you know, you've got, there's like the
sure.
practical side of,
sure.
you know, you're driving kids to these different
mm-hmm.
things, and
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? I don't have endless amount of time to circle up psychotherapy, you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's like there's a practical thing of dealing with little kids, like I almost think of like when you say about the Israelites when they're young, it's like very simple stuff these kids.
Yeah.
I know. Okay,
but you know, I mean, they're not. These are not advanced high. You know,
right.
This is not high schoolers. These
but
are
it's kind
really
of reminds. I mean, I hate to bring this up, but it kind of reminds me of my drive-thru story.
Yes.
So, like, with
yes.
my now 6-year-old, when I don't know how many of you remember, like when that car was like swearing at me, like the
yeah.
whole time through the drive-thru, and they were like swearing, and you know, my social justice piece comes up, like you're swearing in a drive-thru at Wendy's to a car full of kids. What is your problem? You know what I mean? So I went back to basically say all those things. And so I got out of my car to say, you're swearing at kids in a car. What is your problem? I'm not going to move till you stop swearing. Like, this is going to go slower for you because, you know, blah, 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 the way you're behaving, all this stuff. You know, and it was like, you want me to move faster? Shut your mouth, you know? And so, anyway, that was my beautiful naming worth moment. I go back into the car, and, like, she was, I think, probably 4 at the time. And she's like, oh, did you invite them for dinner?
Oh.
And I was like, no, I didn't invite them for dinner. And then I stupidly was like, Now, why would I invite her? And she goes, because they forgot how to be nice.
Oh.
And she's like, we have to show them. They forgot. And so I feel like it's kind of like, so I guess in that way, I think, I almost think the 4-year-old
yes.
gets it yes. more than me. Because I have, like,
mm-hmm.
learned how to defend myself. I've learned how to figure out the game,
yeah.
how to work it, how to, you know what I mean? How to make people feel bad. so they do what I want.
That's what mean? Jesus calls with that, like children or behave like children, like that.
You know what I mean?
Simple,
yes.
Right. And so I think, like, for me, I was like, oh, right.
Yep. And without Sophia saying that, we would have all thought Sherilyn was absolutely justified in what she did, right?
And we posted on Facebook. This girl was swearing behind me.
Right, and this is what I did. And everyone said, good for you. Right. You stuck up for your kids.
Right.
Yeah. No, you didn't. Mm-hmm. Sophia did.
Yeah.
So do you... It is a paradigm we don't live in. It is a paradigm that seems like it's not... It seems impractical.
Right, and kind of impossible.
And kind of impossible, yeah. And kind of like...
Radical.
It's completely radical.
Right.
And that's the point. We are not supposed to look practical. And we're not supposed to be like, oh, yeah, well, this is what a good parent would always stick up for their kid. They would. By naming worth in somebody else. Ooh. And see, that even gives me chills to think, wow.
Well, I think we think we're supposed to stick up for our kids. But really what God is calling us to do is to stick up for everyone and not stick up for our kids. And then if we have anything left in the tank,
right?
You know, name worth in someone else. Like, I think most of us as parents really believe we're supposed to take care of our own kids first.
Yes.
And if we have anything left over, then reach out. And I don't really think that that's what the Bible says.
Right. In fact, I mean, the New Testament says it over and over again, right? Leave father and mother. Stop having these connections where this is most important. No. Everyone's an image bearer. And our image bearing responsibility is to name worth in everybody we see.
Mm-hmm. Well, the cool thing is your son probably is going to, I mean, he probably knows why they're doing that.
Oh,
in a way, in his heart.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And if it's like, oh my gosh, they've forgotten how to be nice.
Yes.
What if we invite one of them for dinner? He's probably like, oh, right. They forgot how to be nice.
Yeah.
You know, and we're like, those parents suck.
Right.
You know
what I mean? Yeah.
That's totally, anyway.
Yeah.
It's just funny to me, though, like, it's like so simple that I totally forget. And I can't tell you, that wasn't 2 years ago. Like 2 weeks ago, I wanted to yell at somebody behind me. It's so hard to reframe.
It is, it's very difficult. And fear does obscure for us our purposes. Mm-hmm. I mean, and defending our kids is a fear, right? We're very afraid that they might get hurt. Boy, I mean, this just has so many implications for every day that we live. But fear obscures our purpose. And our purpose is to defend who God is, that God names worth in everybody, that he is a God of grace and what is wholeness. And he wants people to come to that.
Thank you, Maida. I seriously feel like you were so vulnerable.
And that actually helps.
Putting that story out there. I just thank you for letting us, like, work through it with you.
Because that helps every one of us, right? Has every one of us just gone, whoa.
Yeah. I mean, like, doing that with my 18-year-old. Like, I want to be with him when he's with this group of people so I can make sure he's not being mistreated. And he's 18.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, I want to do it with my 30-year-old son.
Well, and I don't have kids, but it's still working through that with you guys. Like, that's shifting my paradigm and how I treat people and how I respond to fear or respond to, you know, pushback or bully, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and I'll tell you, like, to go back a little bit, my reaction when I got the call from my daughter, I literally called my husband in China and said, we're moving. Yeah. Don't let me list the house. I'm just putting up a fence for spring break. I'm not kidding. I called the realtor. I literally started driving. I'm like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
So the step that I took to reach out to these moms, one who's going through a health issue, she's home on medical leave, and I sat with her yesterday for a half hour.
Yeah.
I said, I want to drive you to the grocery store because I know we're housebound.
Yes.
So this is actually my attempt to make
soaking
in.
Yeah.
It's this other mom that is like a lot harder for me because I, like, we do tend worth. We play with these kids.
Yeah.
We're the ones setting up the, you know, lemonade stand at the end of the street. You know, my girls, their mission on this street is to help play with these boys and make it fun. And
sometimes
I guess I feel like it's a raw deal because we've really invested a lot in trying to make this street. I mean, we're the ones calling them every one of them together for barbecues or whatever, and I'm like, can't you be nice to my 5-year-old, really? It's, you know, it's like,
I'm on the Grizzlies. I've thought about this a lot, even last week and this week of when we really want to tend in name, and it's not received. And even just sitting here, I'm like, and that somehow is a weird, twisted way of making me feel valuable. Like if someone receives my naming, we're like, I need to release that too.
Because it's not a transaction.
Might never respond.
That's right. Right.
And that does not mean that you are not trying to offer reconciliation.
Right.
Like I think, I just have a friendship that I'm in that and going like, trying really hard to like love you and care for you. You are not receiving this. This does not. That is not my identity, whether or not you receive my name attending. Like, and you might not ever, but that doesn't mean that I'm not leaning into what God's calling me to.
Right.
It might be a different picture,
right,
the
exactly.
outcome of what. I think that's what I struggle with when I say, I'm like, no, I'm trying so hard to name.
Right.
You are not receiving it.
Yes, right.
And I can't, and that's as much as I can. I'm struggling with, so do I now just go, I named, and you're not, I mean, that's right.
Yep.
I tried.
Right, right. I did it.
That's another long conversation.
But that's a good conversation to have, because then pull back and go, so what about God?
Yeah.
What's my motivation?
Does he have 4 times that he'll name us and then go, done?
But there is, though, that wipe the sandal, there is a little bit of that, though.
Yep.
That
there is.
You're told in the New Testament, if you go to a house, your name worth is not working out, move on.
Yep.
there is.
Yep. There is some of that. But it definitely has to be discerning. And like Nehemiah would say, you better ask every single time, do I stop naming here? Do I stop naming here? Mm-hmm. And actually, it's not to stop naming. It's actually to go on. Just go on. It's not to stop naming, because most likely, God may give you another chance to name that person. Mm-hmm. But it's not, now I don't have to go out of my way to pursue. Mm-hmm. But here's the interesting thing. God will. God will go out of his way to pursue us, even when we have not received his naming over and over and over again. And, Ilana?
Last night, my brother-in-law passed away a week ago, and they had his memorial service yesterday. And it was, as I sat there, it was the most, he was not a well individual. And, it was like this moment where this priest that my niece just got out of probably a phone book or something came and was trying to, so let's tell stories of Richard's kindness or Richard's, and people couldn't do it. It was the most heartbreaking moment there just to sit there. And then I'm thinking, but God has worth, and this man was just like, so tell a story of something that he did that was kind. And not, even his daughter was just like, well, I know my dad ran track. And that was the extent of it. And I'm thinking, it was just real. And then I looked at the difference between the legacy of my husband and him.
Right.
And it was just really sad.
That's
really
sad.
And just think that was, and even just explaining to my niece that, her uncle went beyond to try to get him to these places of wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
And when there was just the invitation is extended over and over. So it was hard. Just to see
that would be very
difficult. Someone's life had a room full of people that was even 10. And nobody could really say, he took one for the team here. Or
nothing.
But, it was just, and it's like,
And you wonder, in situations like that, was it a lifetime full of not being named?
Yeah.
And that is what happens. When we stop naming people and we pull away, and other people pull away, because when we stop naming, other people are going to stop naming.
Right.
What happens to someone who is not named over and over and over again? I mean, what happened to them? We see it, right? We see it in society. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the end result, right? Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because at the end of life, people do kind of fall into those two categories, mm-hmm. in a way. You have your, like, elderly who are, like, super sweet and naming worth, and you have really, really grumpy people, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And it just kind of, like, yeah. falls those ways.
It does. So I guess, and this is kind of what I was hoping. I was actually hoping for this kind of a conversation because it's so in us, and I don't know that we look at it. We don't look about fear. We don't look at what we do with fear, and that we so often take it in, and that we begin to react and protect ourselves in ways that an image bearer isn't called to, mainly because we give others the power to say that they're able to determine my worth, or determine my child's worth, or to determine worth of somebody that I love. It's a big deal for us. It's a really big deal for us. And, you know, we read Nehemiah and we think it's a very obvious thing. But as we get farther into Nehemiah, Tobias is going to come up again. And you're going to realize he is a part of their culture, actually. He's a part of their actual community. He's married to a Jew, and his son is married to a Jew. And you're going to see how ensconced he is in the community.
He's listed in the next chapter, right?
He's listed in the next chapter. He's listed in a couple chapters to go. And wait till you see how ingrained he is. So this isn't just like a very obvious enemy. To them, this was part of the community. And that's what I'm saying is it's very subtle as to how fear controls us. How fear of man controls us. So we need to understand what it is and how it works. So we need to understand it comes through repeated messages over and over again of intimidation or shame, that it stops the work of us restoring, and it stops relationship for us naming, for us revealing the truth about who God is and our purpose. And it stops us from receiving wholeness too then. Because if I stop naming, I've stopped fulfilling my image-bearing identity.
Well, if we're not naming someone, I think we're harboring bitterness toward them.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. If we're not... And what we're trying to do then is name ourselves, our own worth, mm-hmm. right? You know,
you really can't be neutral.
No, you cannot be neutral. And then it sets you up to strive, and now you're going to always be trying to do exactly. So what's happened is you just got sucked back into that paradigm, and now you're just in it. So as subtle as it is, it's really, really very influential in how we begin to live. And then we start going back in that paradigm. We don't even realize that we're in that paradigm again. So, yeah.
I don't even know if it's all related. First thing, but everything that's been said, I found myself in a situation the other day driving the car, and I don't remember exactly what happened. I mean, I accidentally cut someone off, or maybe someone cut me off. My heart was racing, my head was like on fire, and physically I was like scared but angry. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. And I just totally related that same situation to you getting this call, mm-hmm. Mom, Benjamin's crying, blah, blah. And also I'm like, you get this physical reaction, oh, yeah. that I literally, while I was driving, I'm like, what is going on with me? Like, whether it's hormones or not, that's another story, but like, just this physical reaction that I almost had to like just let calm down, because my reaction could have been, we're moving, you know, right, or right. I'm cutting you back off. And
right.
It was just kind of like,
right.
okay, calm down, try to identify right. what was going on with me. And I feel like as humans, we have this very visceral mm-hmm. reaction that if I wasn't in a car, I may have punched someone. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's like this, like you almost don't have control over it. Just this visceral reaction. Like, you know, when you touch something hot, you react. And mm-hmm. I feel like at what point do we logically, mentally kind of like, okay,
90 seconds, right?
I was just going to say, anybody remember how long
calm
it takes?
Down,
yeah.
Like, calm down.
Yep.
And then so, it was better.
So were you here when we talked about the 90 second? So your brain, that actually happens. Emotion comes through. It lasts 90 seconds. After 90 seconds, you make a decision whether to keep it or not. Okay. So you're right about waiting. Wait 90 seconds and decide not to keep it. Not to keep that food. So that physical thing is true. It's a physiological reaction. All sorts of endorphins go through, and it lasts 90 seconds. So that is physiologically just the truth.
I just thought of a great app on Twitter, the 90-second Twitter delay.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. And that's the whole thing is
trouble in the world.
You wait 90 seconds, and then you decide intentionally. Okay, done with that emotion.
They usually say count to 10, mm-hmm. and
really
slowly. I just read that the first sentence in the Lord's Prayer is 10 words, and instead of counting from 1 to 10, just say the first.
Oh, I like that.
Sentence of the Lord's Prayer, and I thought, well, that's probably not 90 seconds, so maybe you ought to say a little bit more than that.
Yeah. So does that help, Lisa? I mean,
it does, because I feel like we're such physical.
Well, yeah, we are. Yep.
And I've been in a similar situation where you're like, and it's not like I chose to have that reaction.
Right.
It's just
right.
Like it happened.
Right.
Right.
Right. It's that's a BIOS. That's a BIOS thing.
BIOS reaction.
But it doesn't last.
What you need, when you're not in a safe environment, right?
Yes,
like you need to fight.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Right.
Yes. Right. And I think that's, it's like, do we consider ourselves safe to begin with?
Right.
That we can wait 90 seconds.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's like the thing too.
Yeah. And another practice again, right? Because we do tend, in this society, we tend to say that how I feel is something I can't control, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Number one. So how I feel and what I believe almost, what I think is right, is just right. And it isn't true. So to understand, and that's why I do love bringing in some of the science and thing, to understand all this comes together. God made us in a certain way. We can deal with that. We actually can control our feelings. Can't control the first 90 seconds, but we can control everything after that. So now we get to, okay, can we define fear? Which I've already kind of done, but let's talk about this in three ways. What is fear of man? Number one, it is an acknowledgement that man has power, and the power he has, this is an acknowledgement that he has the power to determine my worth. So fear of man, number one, is I acknowledge that man has the power to determine my worth. So when I'm afraid of someone, I just need to think, am I saying that he has the power to determine my worth? Mm. And I can refute that by saying, absolutely not. He does not have the power to determine my worth. Number two, it is a response to his mask. Remember that whatever he has built up as for himself, his reputation, his success, his largeness, whatever it is, and that's kind of, we always think, right? When we're fearful of somebody, we always think of them as big. Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. In some way, we think of them as big. So it's that building up. Oh, man, when did we talk about this? We hide our connection by being pretty or big. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what the last one was. But big is this. I've built myself up to be able to say I can give you worth or not. I can mm-hmm. determine my worth. Mm-hmm. So that when I'm fearful of someone, I'm actually reacting to his mask. His mask is something that he's built up to say, I can give people, I'm worthy because I've done something to make myself worthy, and I can make you worthy or not. But that's a mask. That's not a truth. He can't make himself worthy, and he can't make you worthy. So when I admire somebody who has built up success and finds worth in what he's done, when I kowtow to them, when I covet their confidence that they are so worthy, I effectively say to him, that is a way to thrive. That's a way you can actually, that the worldly paradigm is true. I can build up my own worth. And yet we do, right? We admire people who have built up their own worth. I just had a conversation with somebody who said that. So they said, oh, I just admire that person so much.
This is celebrities.
And the American dream.
Yeah. Of course. Right. Of course. You know, we love the stories of the person who, you know, by his own bootstrap, right?
Yeah.
You know, did think. I know, the conversation was Stephen Hawking. They said, I just admire that man so much. And my first thought was, you admire him? Boy, I was thinking just the opposite. I mean, he leaves his wife. You know, there's all sorts of things. And you think, interesting. But the fact that he, and they basically said, you know, he's overcome all of this and he's become a great person. And wow. Yeah, you know what? He's the same as everybody else. He's got the same worth as everybody else. And it's not more and it's not less. So when I fear, it's an acknowledgement that they have the power to determine my worth. It is a response to their mask, not their real self. And it is a desire to maintain a false harmony. Now that I think every one of us knows, right? I mean, we like to keep the peace. It's just, sometimes it seems just easier to just, okay, I'm going to go along with them just so that there's peace here. But of course, the question always is that peace? Is it peace to allow someone to continue to believe that he can create worth for himself and for you? No, because it's not truth. So you're not actually maintaining harmony. The problem is we don't like messiness, right? We don't like that feeling of messiness. We want to keep our bios and our suke happy. I did that again. Happy. Keep that okay, happy. But if I keep the peace where someone is intimidating me or shaming me into doing something or to believing that they can give me worth, then I perpetuate the idea that you can thrive under maintaining your own getting your own worth by something you do. And that is not what an image bearer does. It's not creating an accurate picture of who God is. Does this make sense? Mm-hmm. Is this hard?
Yeah. I'm thinking of two things, Jill. Well, first, how often in the church do we do that? Of like, we need to do that, like that.
Yes.
That. Yes. And then also, Kristen, what you were saying, like that story of the tribe, of thinking how valuable community is in not living in fear. Like, right. If I think that my faith is just my own, and yes. I'm, like, living in this bubble,
yes.
And Annie's mean to me or intimidating me, and I have no one else that's helping remind right. me who I am,
right.
I'm believing
right.
that.
Yes.
Of, like,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Annie, are you being mean to
Annie? Annie's always wanted to be intimidating.
You know what? Hey, Annie, you're never going to make it.
So now I'm like, maybe this is good that I'm not.
Yes, Natalie, that's so true. And that is why, do you understand why then Nehemiah starts with unity?
Yes.
I mean, because now it makes sense, right? Oh, we need that unity within the body so that when that fear comes along, we gather around each other. No, wait. Let's build one another up. Let's toward both the intimidators and the intimidated. That's what unity is for, is to build one another up, naming our worth with one another. That's what the body should look like. So how many times has that happened in your community? That people have come around you in that nice little circle and said, no, you know, when you did something wrong and or when someone intimidated you. I mean, I don't think many of us have that experience.
We don't have much community in the life.
Yeah. Not the community that Scripture is talking about, right? Right. We have.
But it happens individually.
It does.
I mean, there are a lot of times since I've been doing this, what do you call it, examine every day.
Yes, yes.
That I talk to somebody and they say something that makes me feel valuable.
Yes.
So that it's, and this is how, and I've noticed that. I mean, I never paid so much attention to it before. And so it's not necessarily, you know, the community that
you live in that mm-hmm. surrounds you, mm-hmm. your family, of course. Mm-hmm. Or at church, we have small groups at church, and our small groups mm-hmm. are very good at doing yep. that. Mm-hmm. But individuals, just, you yeah. know, here, yeah. there, or over there, somebody says something, and you say, wow.
Yeah.
That was so nice.
Yeah.
I said that.
And that, with for yourself, that actually becomes a circle around you, right? Mm-hmm. If let's say every day you hear one person name you, mm-hmm. in 7 days you've got this circle of seven, right? Mm-hmm. That have come kind of come around you.
Oh, thank you.
What?
You start to like that person.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? Right. Yeah. You're not gonna like them because they told you to like. Come on, you gotta like me. It's, I have named you, and all of a sudden you're like, your defenses went down, is what happened.
It's true. It's kind of like when, you know, someone says if you get 8 meaningful hugs a day or touches.
Yeah, yeah.
So I try to do that at work.
If you're a person who likes touches.
Yeah. I hug these individuals that I know don't have moms in the area, so it's like you just give them a big old hug and just say,
but at the same time, I feel like it's kind of paralleling back to when we did the thing with the medals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You got to be careful that you're naming more than the right thing.
True word, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
You
it can't.
Oh, I love your hair.
No. Right. Right.
You know, it should be. You got to keep that. To me, right. The visual was very
right.
That you're pointing to what the worth is.
Yes. Really, where is the worth? Yeah. Exactly. And really, when you point out worth, you point out where they're reflecting God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it might be nice to say that you have a nice haircut. Don't think it reflects God, though. I mean, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with complimenting. But complimenting is different than naming worth. So,
Just do both.
Or you could do, yeah. Just do both. I like your hair. You're so compassionate.
Jill, I will take both of those.
I will, too. I will, too. I agree. Okay, so that's where the fear of man lies and how much power it has over us. Remembering, though, we are the ones who give it the power. They have the power to name worth. They don't have the power to determine my worth. So
I was going to say, this is all really interesting, too, because I'm in a grad school class about power.
Oh.
Right now, power strategies. And one of the things is I'm learning that the power they're teaching us to have is very individualistic.
Oh.
Like all these stories in this book about power strategies is all these people that have created themselves as individuals, like, and taken it. And I just read a chapter about likability and how you're not supposed to have likability.
So and like teaching you how to put on a mask.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's all fear. It is the whole book. And I sat there and like reading it, and we're supposed to write these discussion posts. And I my whole discussion post was how I disagree with this chapter. Because I was like, how does that help anybody? I was like, this whole, it's all fear-based. And it's all based out of this negative, you know, vision of power.
Right.
And it's kind of funny because part of it I was reading, I was like, this is great. Like, this is interesting. Like, this is how you get power.
Right,
but
right.
then reading this, I'm like, and being here, I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, I'm in a grad school class where they're teaching us to do something totally opposite of what God is ultimately calling us.
And that's absolutely that.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, it's just crazy.
So maybe here's a suggestion. Read alongside of that Andy Crouch. I think it's called Playing God, taking up something about power. Mm-hmm. That's all he talks about, naming, tending, multiplying.
Who's the author, Jill?
Andy Crouch. Probably one, for me, one of the most influential writers on that kind of thing, on what real power looks like. And I'll find it somewhere, the name, I can't remember exactly, but just look up Andy Crouch. And he's got Culture Making was his first one, and then... I don't think it's called power. Okay. Ruling or something like that. Anyway, it's funny because when I saw Andy Crouch, I thought, no, Andy Crouch is a singer. So those who are older, as old as I am, that's who he used to be. That's what he was, a Christian singer, right?
Oh, redeeming the gift of power.
Redeeming the gift of power. There we go. Thank you.
Read that after this class.
Yeah, you should, because it will give you what God looks at. Because we already have power, but the power of the name contend. His kind of power. So, all right. So this is what he's a professor, William Eisenhower. He says, unfortunately, many of us presume that the world is the ultimate threat and that God's function is to offset it. How different this is from biblical position that God is far scarier than the world. When we assume that the world is the ultimate threat, we give it unwarranted power. For in truth, the world's threats are temporary. When we expect God to balance the stress of the world, we reduce him to the world's equal. That's part of the quote. I'll give you the other part at the end. I think that's an interesting idea, that he's saying we're so afraid of the world and we want God to counteract that for us. But God is actually scarier than the world. Does that remind you of any...
Job,
yes. Yes, exactly. Right, right. I think a lot of times about C.S. Lewis. And what does he say? What does he have his character say about Aslan? Is he safe? Oh, safe? No. But he is good. So now we're going to look at fear of God. So I need us to understand that the fear is actually the same.
Safe.
Yeah. He's not safe, but he's good. Yes. So now fear of God. So we see after Nehemiah encounters the possibility of fearing man. And Nehemiah does a great job with it. He never succumbs to the fear of man. And of course, when you see what Tobias, how ingrained he is in the society, and people are looking to Tobias for their worth. Nehemiah does a really good job of being able to not fight against Tobias because he fears God. And we see that that's how he actually decides to continue on in Jerusalem in chapter 7. So the wall is completed. When the enemies heard of it, so they dismiss the fear. They're not going to be afraid of man. Man doesn't have the power over them. They build the wall. And how many days does it take them to build the wall?
2 days.
I mean, come on, guys. Less than 2 months to build the wall, to build all the gates and all the walls. You know, this is, I can't remember, is it 2 miles around, I think? So it's a pretty amazing feat. When the wall was completed, when all our enemies heard of it and all the nations surrounding us saw it, they lost their confidence, for they recognized that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. So what happens with Nehemiah is he doesn't succumb to the fear of man, and now people get to see God because he doesn't succumb. He doesn't buy back into that paradigm of doing all of those things. Had he done so, the nations around and the people who are against him would never have gotten to see God. So we give up a lot when we give in to the fear of man. So how does it come? How does the fear of God come? The same way it comes with the fear of man. The fear of man comes through repeated messages, so it does with God. But it's God's messages we hear rather than man's messages. And God's messages come through three avenues: his word, his creation, and his spirit. Repeatedly, right? We hear it from his word all the time. But we also, he's every day repeating his message about his goodness and his grace and the way he protects things. I mean, the fact that we have come through a really hard winter, and that did anyone see flowers blooming this?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, and I'll tell you, for me, so I have a couple of flowers that are in my little rock vase there. Mm-hmm. Those flowers were actually starting to bloom before we had all the snow. Beginning in January, they got frozen and covered over all that snow. So, you know, it was probably 2 feet high over those things. They had been starting to bloom. And I thought for sure they were done, that I wouldn't get them this year. There they are. Right there, God says, you think I have some power? Do you think that I absolutely have the ability to bring worth and name everything and make things beautiful? And I have all sorts of things to give you. In nature, He repeats his messages over and over again, who he is, and through his spirit. And remember, when his spirit repeats the messages, it's through tending. So the spirit is the one who tends. He's called, right, the comforter. But sometimes he tends with correction, right? And sometimes he tends with comfort. But it's all tending, which we're going to have to remember a little bit when we understand the fear of God. And sometimes it's with direction, literally telling us which way to go. So the fear of God comes through God's repeated messages, which means that's what we're supposed to be listening to, seeing, hearing. Nehemiah knows God's word. He's heard it and over and over and over again, so that when he is said, when his supposed friend says, oh, let's go into the temple. I love that part, because why does he go visit that friend? I can't remember what his name is.
Shemaiah?
Is it Shemaiah that he goes to visit? And why does he go visit him in his home? Because he's going to find a home. But what does Shemaiah say?
Let's go.
Let's go into the temple and hide. I read that about four times. Like, I thought you were confined at home. That probably gave Nehemiah the first clue. This is not from God. Nehemiah knows God's word well enough so that when Shemaiah says, let's go into the temple and hide, what he knows over and over again, oh, no, I can't go in the temple and hide. I'm not a priest. And God said, there's a boundary for a good reason for you. So, because he heard that over and over and over again, it didn't tempt him. Do you see that? So there's this huge idea of, what repeated messages are we always listening to? Because what we talked several weeks ago about how the myelin is created in our brain, the practice over and over and over again, what are we hearing? What are we seeing? What are we listening to? Over and over and over again. Which messages? If the world is constantly repeating the messages over and over again, we're getting them. We counteract it with, are we getting more repeated messages of God? Are we seeing God in nature? Are we hearing his word? Are we hearing his spirit? Does this make sense? Mm-hmm. This is the way that Nehemiah is able to not be a fearful man, but fearful of God instead. God's messages, instead of being messages of intimidation and shame, will be just the opposite, of course. They will be messages of life, that he has breath to give us constantly, and messages of worth. And he will say, I have named you as an image bearer. I established your worth before you were even born. And it's a fixed worth. It's a worth that can't change. And if you hear that over and over and over again, I am not going to be needing to intimidate others. I'm not going to need to build up my own worth. And I will be free to name and tend. Do you see how important it is that we know who we are? And that we hear it over and over again. And why the unity in the body is so important. The unity about, not do we agree, but am I there naming worth for you? And are you there naming worth for me? What does the fear of God do? Instead of stopping work like the fear of man does, it actually regulates relationships. So the fear of man stops relationships. The fear of God actually regulates relationship. It actually keeps you in that cohortive dependence with God and others. It is, now I'm constantly talking to God. Now I'm constantly asking him, what's going on? Is this good? Should I do this? Should I not do this? With my brothers, it encourages and protects their integrity as identity of image bearers, as ones who name and tend. And with opponents, it preserves the invitation for them to name worth, to be an image bearer. So fearing God rather than man helps with our relationships as well. And when I get down to the definition, maybe this will make a little more sense. But it also regulates our work. So when I'm fearing God, it's making sure that everything I'm doing is worship. So that, boy, it would be wonderful if one day we got to the point when we said the word worship and we didn't think Sunday church service. Mm-hmm. If we could get to that point, that's where God wants us. Last night, our professor even mentioned that he said, you know that every day is worship. And Sunday morning is actually the time to celebrate that we've been worshiping and to encourage one another. Let's keep it on. Let's keep going. So that Sunday is this, wow, wasn't it great that we got to worship all week? Mm-hmm. It's not the worship that happens on Sunday. It's worship that happens all the time. That fear of God helps to make sure that everything we're doing is worship, because it keeps me focused on his work of keeping his presence, the integrity of his presence whole, and of keeping me from focusing on my work, of my building, of my protecting, of my getting my own worth. Because if I'm really concerned every day about protecting God's worth, God's, the integrity of who he really is, I'm not looking at me getting worth. And he's making sure that I hear that I'm worthy. And it keeps me persevering in the work of restoration. It keeps me going when I'm in fear of God rather than man. And it prepares, this is so funny, I didn't even realize I had this on here. It prepares you to celebrate, which is exactly what my professor said last night. You know, it's funny. When I go to school, I think, I wonder if I'm going to hear anything that will kind of correspond with what I'm teaching, you know? And I thought last night we were going to do Isaiah, and instead we did Jonah. And I thought, you know, what's going to be there? And the first thing the professor says, he says, so this week I've been studying fear. And I just sit there and I go, it's just always like that. And then that he talked about that Sunday is actually the celebration of being able to worship. It prepares us. For the very end of Nehemiah 7, I love how it ends. Because, I mean, it just says, so now, after they've built the wall, they've not feared man, they've feared God instead. Now the priests, the Levites, the gatekeepers, the singers, some of the people, the temple servants and all Israel lived in their cities. And when the 7th month came, the sons of Israel were in their cities. In other words, when the 7th month came, they were ready to celebrate. Because what's 7th month? So we will see the 7th month celebration. It's the celebration that they come to Jerusalem, and they're able to celebrate. When I fear God, it prepares me to celebrate. Because I've gotten to celebrate that I've gotten to work all week with God. That I've actually joined him in his work. What more could there be to celebrate? I mean, I got to be a co-creator all week long. That's celebration. I mean, that is so cool. It's like getting the best job that you could ever think of. And at the end of the week, you're like, I can't believe I got to do that. In fact, and this came out of the mouth of Keith Urban. So I was a little surprised, but he said this, and I thought, that's exactly what it means. That's what it is. It's not, here's what I had to do. I had to name worth this week. I had to do this. I had to name worth, and it's also not, I'm pretty good at naming worth. I can name worth. It is, I get to name worth. I get to be an image bearer. I get to work alongside God. That's exactly it. It should never be at the point of where, well, I have, you know, this is an obligation I have as an image bearer, so I have got to go out and name worth. It's not that. And it's not, you know, I'm pretty good at naming worth, so this sits well with me. It is, I get to be a co-creator with God? Really? That's amazing. That's celebration. That's what happens when I'm living in fear of God rather than fear of man. So what is the fear of God? It's the exact same thing as the fear of man. So it isn't separate. It isn't different. It is believing that God actually holds the power to determine my worth. Oh, he does. And this is why the fear of God is good and the fear of man isn't. He does have the power to determine my worth. He already has determined my worth. It is, this is what I've written down, a continual awareness, and this is what I've been trying to cultivate, a continual awareness of being in the presence of the one who determines my worth, of the one who is the only one who is the source of life, the only one who is completely sovereign, and that he is, because he determines my worth, He can also say, that's not good. That will obscure your worth. That's not good. We need to take that away. Mm-hmm. So in reality, the fear we have, it's an understandable fear, because it's the fear that he will actually destroy our ego. And that's a good thing. We don't want to let go of that part that says we're the center, we're the standard. That's your ego. What I feel is what I should do. I'm not the center. And God has the power to destroy that in us so that we get to see our worth, so that we get to see that we're image bearers. We fear God because we understand. It's almost as if you picture God right behind your shoulder, like everything you do today. Like, you turn on, there's God. There's God right there. And it's like he's saying, that's going to obscure your worth if you do that. That's not going to be naming worth. That's trying to pull up your worth. And you have this fear of, like, I don't want to do wrong, but it's going to hurt, right? It's going to hurt because he'll actually be taking some of my pieces of me away, right? Because I do live in that paradigm of, I'm going to build my worth up.
An ego has anybody ever heard the acronym? Ego means edging God out.
Ooh, I've never heard that. I love that.
Mm-hmm. When you said that yes. Reminded me exactly.
That's exactly what it is.
We don't want our ego
taken
away.
No, we don't want it taken away. And yet that's what he's been doing for us, right? Mm-hmm. Because he wants us whole. And so do you understand that fear, same thing. There is this matter of trust in both fears. You're trusting someone has power to either determine your worth or not. And the reason it's bad in man is because it's not true. And the reason it's good in God is not because. And we always try to separate, right? We say fear of God is reverence and fear of man is trembling. Same word. It's the same word. It's the same thing. It's just that God actually does have the power and man doesn't. So it is the same thing. So us being continually aware of being in the presence of the one who can take away our ego so that our worth is seen more, so that we live more into who we are. That is that real fear that's good. So that's what, Wendy, you had talked about healthy fear. That's exactly what it is. Because it's true. And that's why it's healthy, right? It's unhealthy when it's not true. That's the difference here. That's so instead of being in man, it's a response to his mask. For God, it's a response to who he really is, to how he has revealed himself. And it is a desire not to maintain a false harmony, but to actually live in the harmony of what God's purpose is for us, for the world, for his restoration, to honor him in the restoring process. So here's the end of that quote from William Eisenhower, who said, God is far scarier. As I walk with the Lord, I discover that God poses an ominous threat to my ego, but not to me. He rescues me from my delusions, which are saying, I'm the center, I'm the standard, so he may reveal the truth that sets me free. He casts me down only to lift me up again. He sits in judgment of my sin, forgiving me nonetheless. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, but love from the Lord is its completion. So, fearing the Lord is an honest response. I don't want to die. I don't want my ego to die. It's an honest response. And God says, I know, but it needs to. I want to make you whole. So this fear of God is the beginning of seeing and understanding the wholeness that God wants in us, so that when we're building up the things that will preserve God's integrity, we build up unity, but we also build up the fear of God. And in building up the fear of God, we let go of the fear of man. So I want you to think about the things that you are fearful of man in. Now, not think about someone so much holding power over you, but the messages that you're getting over and over again to be fearful, to get back into that paradigm of building up your own worth. That's really where we're getting over and over again the fear of man. Does this make sense to you? So let me ask you these questions. Oh, I guess I should finish up real quick. Why this is important is because, number one, it aligns us with reality. Because, true, God does hold the power of determining our worth. He's already determined. It's fixed. And he wants to show us more and more so that we can live into it more and more. His power, again, is vulnerable power. He's sharing it with us so that we can be more whole. And it's the only source of wholeness that we're going to ever encounter. But it is also our repeated message. And this is really important. If we are image bearers, then our repeated message is that God is the only one who determines your worth. That he's determined it, it's fixed, and he's been trying to reveal it to you over and over again with all the things that he's coming to. Along with unity, it is the wall and gates that we are building to protect his integrity. So here are the questions for you. What repeated messages are you subjecting yourself to? So in the world, for under the world's paradigm, what are you reading continually? What are you watching continually? What are you listening to continually? Because what you are doing continually, those are going to create myelin for you. And you are going to hear those messages over and over and over again. And pretty soon, remember what myelin does? It makes your responses faster and stronger. So think about, what are the repeated messages you're subjecting yourself to in the world? And then flip it over. What are the repeated messages from God's truth that you're seeing, that you're hearing, that you're listening to? When you weigh those two out, boy, if the one on God's truth isn't a lot heavier, I am absolutely sure that you will fall into, that we will fall into being fearful of man rather than God. Because it's what we are building our brains to respond to. Now here's the flip side of the question. Remembering that what I hear repeatedly is what I'll do, what repeated messages am I giving out? Am I repeating the messages of the world that you can build up your own worth, that you can name, that you can determine other people's worth? Or am I repeatedly giving out the message that God has determined your worth already, that God has fixed your worth, that God is a God of grace who desires people to be whole? What are the messages that I'm repeating over and over and over again? And of course, you know, most of the times, what did St. Francis say? If you need to, use words. Because most of the times, it's not the words. It's our actions, right? It's our attitudes. Knowing that the way we think will come out in our actions and in our attitudes. So that if I'm thinking, I hear the repeated messages of the world, that I'm thinking them, and I haven't stopped them every 90 seconds, then I'm going to also give that out. And I'm going to give the same message, and I'm going to perpetuate that paradigm, rather than being an image bearer that perpetuates the idea that God is a God who names worth, who tends. And in that tending, it can look all different ways, from discipline to comfort. Is that the message I'm giving out in my life? The way I live, the way I speak, the way I relate to other people. So, I didn't think I would get through all of that. Does anyone have questions or comments as we kind of struggle with this, Jen?
Well, I guess, you know, my thought on this, which I think the trap I could get into, is that being clear on that God has named and determined our work, not that he, that you mean that works mentality.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Right. Yep. And so then his tending is pointing out the nuances of where you're
you know, yep. you're not naming one of others. Or
right, right. That's not really who you are.
Right.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. I was at the top of the at the top of this lesson, I was thinking about my oldest son and how, like, he kind of, I was like, wait, but does he get this or not? Because he's so confident, like, he doesn't feel the need to prove himself at all. And it's super annoying because he'll go to school and he, like, won't try, and I'll be like, if you're going to get into a good school, like, you have to get A, you know, you got to try. And he's like, oh. I was like, it's so lame to prove myself. I know I'm smart. So I'm always like, do you know what I mean? And he's like, I know, like, why do I have to do something for her to say that I'm smart? I already know it. I don't need her to tell me, you know? And then there's, like, something slightly, like, admirable about that. But, like, also super annoying, because then I'm like, just play the game. Just play the game. They need you to hand in something that proves you're smart. Just prove it. Just prove it. Will you just prove it? You know what I mean? And I'm just like, I don't care how much you already know these things, you know, which is, like, opposite of this lesson. Yeah. So, like, the whole time I'm thinking about this in the lesson, I'm like, why does it feel, like, not good, though? And I think it's because he has fear of nothing.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So it isn't like... He doesn't have fear of God in that. And so therefore, the opposite is actually not any healthier than over here where you fear everybody.
Right.
It's like the place to be is where you actually fear God. Right. You know, and you're like, wow, God has given me this. Right. And what's stewardship look like? And
actually, Noah's worth isn't in his intelligence. That's really not his reflection of God.
For sure.
And that's the problem is... And we do that a lot, right? Well, I'm really good at this, so this must be my reflection. So I'm, well, as soon as you say that, I'm really good at this, and that's my reflection. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Gotcha. But doesn't God use the areas that we don't fear him? He puts us there so we can recognize it.
Exactly.
And he'll recognize that when the right time comes.
Yeah. But I tend to just swing the pendulum too much. Like, I'm like, okay. Just don't need it from anybody. And then I guess I was like, oh, wait.
Yeah, no.
It's like... In God.
Yeah. Yeah, we do have to have fear of God. We absolutely do. Anybody else have any thoughts on your... And are you going, like, swimming?
Just one thing that I wanted to go back to. When we were talking about the fear of a man and what it is a desire to maintain a false harmony, but how do you step out of that without... being critical and still naming and tending.
So, either giving me a little more specifics or somebody else.
Well, I go back to Maida's example of how would I deal, you know, if she needs to, I hate to say correct or fix or whatever, a situation where you know that someone's trying to maintain, that you're just trying, you're going to leave somebody alone in that case. If she chose to leave that other mother alone, but her child is still being bullied, I get stuck in because I want to fix everything. I want to correct things. And sometimes you can't.
Yeah. A lot of times.
Fix it. Yeah. I mean, the goal is that we're naming and tending and...
So what's the third part?
Space.
Making space, right? Letting them have the choice, which is the hard part, right? That's the hardest part.
Yeah.
God said, hey, Adam, you go ahead and continue my work. If you choose not to, that's up to you. I mean, God said that. But that's for us the hardest, right? Giving space. Yeah. I'm going to name you, but it's up to you whether you receive it and whether you change your behavior. Mm-hmm. That's up to you. I cannot force it.
You don't really want just their behavior to change. You want their identity.
Yeah. Although sometimes we do, right? Yeah. Sometimes we just want their behavior to change and, you know, make me feel comfortable. Yeah. But then we're feeding our suke and our bios, right?
Right.
So you're saying, how do we start... It's going to be a wrestle, right? Which means I'm going to have to wrestle with God about it. Boy, God, I need to give space here. I don't know how to do that, and what does that look like? And, of course, giving space to 5-year-olds is very different than giving space to 20-year-olds, right? I'm going to give a little space to 5-year-olds. I'm going to give a lot more space to 20-year-olds. And, you know, I deal with a 30-year-old, man, the space you got to give. I mean, it just seems
far away. Just to give enough space.
They're already far away. I mean, that's our hardest. In the continuum of being an image bearer, that is absolutely the hardest thing, right? To give space.
Well, and in that space, when they then figure it out, they come back and you say, well, that's because, you know, to not say.
Oh, man.
That's because you didn't do what I thought you
made them. Right, you know, right. To me, yeah, you just closed the gate on them.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, that's so hard not to then say, I'm going to give you this space, and you're going to go out there and you're going to do your thing. And then when it all falls apart, I'm going to sit there and go.
Right.
You know, that's the hard part, too.
Yeah. So there's a whole community that does this, right? The Amish. Yeah. So the Amish actually have built into their community a time for giving space. And you know, I think, I just read the stats, I think it's 85% of, everyone knows what the Springery, right? Amish. 85% of those young people who go out into the world and experience everything that the world has to offer come back and live as Amish again.
But the interesting part, I mean, I think the challenge for them would be to have a spirit of Rumspringa whenever that hits.
Right.
Because you're saying everybody's going to hit at 17.
Right.
Go get that all out and come back.
Yeah.
I mean, I think our challenge is, like, what if someone's Rumspringa's at 38? You know what I mean?
Right.
And they walk out on their spouse.
Yes.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, be able to do
so, in other words, naming, intending, giving space isn't neat. It's going to be messy. It's not going to work out. Again, we're going to have a picture of it, right? Oh, if I just, and we put it back into a transaction, if I name, intend, and give space, things will work out. No? Mm-hmm. That wasn't the promise. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jesus didn't say, I'm going to die on the cross, and then everyone is just going to bow down right away. He knows actually they'll bow down eventually, but it didn't. He died knowing that it wasn't going to. So, you know, I don't think we have answers for that, right?
I was impressed by how much Nehemiah prayed.
All the time.
We had to review everything that Nehemiah did. It was like, he prayed. You know, he said he was trying to frighten me. So obviously he probably felt some fear, but he was praying.
Right.
He was constant communication. And, you know, I forget to do that.
Right. Well, and I love Pat's suggestion, right? That feeling, that physical comes up, our Father, who art in heaven. I mean, all of a sudden, I'm going to connect with God on this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody else have any?
Well, I can say, like, when I look at the, like, little hidden gem in this, that I'm like, is that, like, my little guy who, he loves Jesus. I mean, he just has, he really does. But it's like his little trial that is causing us to really pray.
Yes.
You know, really pray for these little boys, and we do that. You know, and I want to, like, the one mom, I just want to shake her and go, can you not come out here and help a little bit and supervise all these kids? Yeah. But, you know, but it's those trials I know that will make him stronger, but yet I know it is part of my responsibility to tend to his needs and protect him a little bit. And equip my girls for how you do that appropriately, but it does feel so messy.
Yes,
I feel like I know the solution here.
Yes,
But it is very, very difficult.
But what a cool! So for us who have grown children, I think, man, what a cool opportunity to know when your kid was five, to be able to show him a different way of living that we name our enemies rather than fight them. Mm-hmm. And I think, what an opportunity you have to be able to do that.
Because his reaction was like, well, what do you do when so-and-so punches you again? I'm going to hit him back. I said, well, what? Like, you gotta walk away. We're going to pray for him. You know?
Yeah.
Still.
But I know. See? And that's, we're all there. We're all there. We all are struggling with that. And that's why God keeps on getting this opportunity after opportunity. You know, it's.
And can I send him up for Taekwondo? I mean,
is that a bad thing?
Depends on why you're doing it.
Okay.
Well, Father, thank you that you challenge us, that you poke at those boxes of our paradigms that we think we've got all neat and tidy, and then you let us know, whew, there's some different aspects of this. We want to fear you. We want to be so aware that we're in your holy presence, that we get to be in your presence, that we're excited about it, but that we're also awed in fear that you are going to take away some of that ego little by little. Thank you that you are willing to do that, that you're willing to have the power over us, that you want to reveal the worth that we have, that you've determined in us. Father, may we walk away today knowing each of these beautiful women, may we each know that you have determined our worth as infinitesimally valuable, that we are image bearers, we are co-creators, and that we get to work with you, the God of the universe. We praise your name. Amen. Amen.